At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You know what's the scariest part of October? Being vulnerable to cybercriminals. That's why this Cyber Scaries Month, you need Webroot Total Protection. With all-in-one protection for your devices, privacy, and identity, Webroot Total Protection helps defend every part of your digital life. Change your October from cyber scary to cyber secure with 60% off Webroot Total Protection at www.webroot.com/audio. That's 60% off for a limited time, but only when you go to www.webroot.com/audio.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
See something, say something. What were the early warning signs? How could Brian Koberger have been prevented? That's a great question because there were a lot of warning signs. There were a lot of social cues that this was not a man in his right mind. But what do you do when there's all the signs? You can't just go arrest somebody for being icky and weird. So what do you do? What do we do as a society for folks like this? Because we're seeing so many of them. We're seeing so many of them in the news where, well, everybody warned everybody. Parents were aware, families aware, friends aware, society's aware that this could potentially be a monster. Unless you're going to have somebody watching that person 24/7 or lock them away against their will, I don't know what you do. We're going to go through all of the stuff, all the warning signs of Brian Koberger that have just been revealed. I welcome your comments in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and press subscribe as well. Because there's a lot. There's a lot of weirdness to Koberger, a lot of uncomfortable, a lot of this guy is going to do some horrible stuff. But we don't arrest people. We don't stop people for crimes that we think they might commit, and that's a good thing. We don't want to live in a society like that. But what do we do with folks like this? He walked into Pullman in late August, like any other first-year doctoral student. New backpack, new building, that mix of ambition and nerves you can smell on a grad student in the first week. If you don't know any better, you'd think Brian Koberger was just another criminology kid trying to make his way. But inside that department, the temperature shifted. Almost immediately, people started whispering, first cautiously, then constantly, because it wasn't one weird comment or an awkward interaction. It was a pattern that gathered speed. The way he focused on women, the way he talked to them, the way he seemed to enjoy making them small. Before Labor Day, he was even out of the rear view. The first formal complaint was on record. By Thanksgiving, there were a dozen more. At least 9 complaints appear in the department's logs. Broader interviews collected by police tally 13, and we're going to go through all of them. Either way, the picture is the same. People inside Washington State University's criminology program felt uneasy and, in some cases, unsafe around Brian Koberger. What bothered them wasn't a single dramatic blow-up. It was the drumbeat. A professor assigned to help shepherd the new cohort said her calendar started filling with conversations she didn't expect to have. Not about coursework, but about Brian. His comments, his conduct, the way he'd hover and stare at basic boundaries as if they were optional. She told investigators he would sometimes step into the shared office where several female grad students worked and physically plant himself in the doorway. She once heard a student say, "I really need to get out of here," and had to intervene so the woman could leave. He had no clue, standing there in that doorway. Or did he have a clue? And he was wielding that dark power he had of intimidation and fear. The same professor said the department was spending an uncomfortable amount of time discussing him in disciplinary meetings. And when those meetings ended, more notes rolled in. Students called his behavior sexist and creepy. Colleagues saying his condescension towards women wasn't a bad day. It was a baseline. If you want the granular detail, listen to the people who were on the receiving end. A divorced woman in the program told police he dismissed her as broken. A deaf classmate recalled being asked straight-faced if she would be comfortable procreating, given her disability. Others described him standing too close, leaning over women in ways that felt less like proximity and more like pressure. I want to note one thing on the procreation end of things, because this seems to be a bizarre affect of Brian Koberger. He also went on that Tinder date, remember? And said, "You have good birthing hips." This is a man that seems to be very obsessed with natural process in some way, shape, or form. Would you feel good procreating, the terminology, because of your disability? That's not Hitler-ish or anything. Female-led classes turned into a running bit of tracking. Classmates literally kept a board to note how often he showed up late to courses taught by women. A male grad student said he got verbally kidnapped in the parking lot, trapped in a three-hour monologue in which Brian bragged about that he could pick up any woman he wanted. And by September, weeks into the term, his reputation had already calcified as being a douche. As one classmate put it, these aren't internet rumors. They come out of interviews compiled by detectives and reflected in unsealed summaries. The kind of paper trail you wish you didn't have that existed. The ugliest line threads through the youngest person in the building. A 19-year-old undergraduate who worked in the department told police he kept peering at her office, boxing her in when she tried to leave and push past the word no, like it wasn't there. When she mentioned she was seeing a woman, it didn't slow him down. She began getting escorted home by a boss. Precautions you take when your gut is telling you this isn't just social awkwardness. A neighbor of hers reported seeing someone right outside her window. Later, the student learned Brian lived nearby. The effect was cumulative, not a single incident to explain away, but a sequence you can feel in your body, cornered at work, watched at home, never sure when. You're around a blind hallway and will find him standing there, waiting for you. Inside faculty offices, the talk got sharper. One professor experienced enough to recognize predators long before they're charged with anything and warned colleagues that if this man ever stood at the front of a classroom, the story would end with an SA and stalking. She urged the department to cut his funding to push him out. In the same packet of interviews, she told investigators about a reported break-in at a female grad student's apartment that fall, with perfume and underwear taken, an incident that, to her, fit too neatly with what she feared he was. In the graduate halls, people traded a phrase that seemed to relish sexual burglary. his self-described research interest? Was it a detached academic label, sexual burglary, or a window into fantasy? Piers speculated openly that he might be an incel. This wasn't the campus rumor mill. It was the climate of a department writing down what it had seen and was trying to keep the floor from tilting under their feet. When the complaints stacked high enough, the school pulled a lever you rarely see. Mandatory discrimination training for the first year doctoral cohort. On November 8th, 2022, according to the interviews, 5 days later, the murders in Moscow, you don't have to weave a conspiracy board to see why timelines make people's stomachs drop. The same students who had been told to sit through a training because of his comments now watched news alerts about four young lives slashed from a neighboring campus. Then they watched him walk back into their classroom. That's a moment that tends to freeze people in their retelling. The way he looked when he returned from Thanksgiving break. Injuries. These are not rumors. Specific descriptions. A classmate sitting 3 feet away clocked bruised knuckles, a wash of redness halfway up the back of his left hand, and a distinct cut on his ring finger. Another student used the phrase cat scratch cuts to describe what she saw on his hands. Others saw wounds on his knuckles and thought he looked like a man who'd been hitting something. He gave different explanations to different people: boxing, an indoor accident, a car crash. And he started wearing a puffy jacket in classes like he'd suddenly gotten cold. That detail sticks because it reads like a person trying to hide the map of what happened across his forearms. The signs were there. It is kind of amazing to me that after there were these homicides and Koberger's driving this white car that people are looking for, and all these students saw all of these undisclosed marks, bizarre marks that he has different stories for, that there wasn't a red flag and a target put on him early on. But you're talking about students. You're talking about young people. You're talking about young people who are extremely inexperienced in life and questionable circumstances and scary situations. You had the girls who didn't call 911 for how many hours, and people trying to understand that way of thinking. I think that's how you need to look at this as well. It's a different mindset, it seems, with a lot of young people on what to do with this sort of information. And unfortunately, it leads to social media and it leads to telling friends. It does not always lead to telling the people who can do something. But even if you did do something, even if you said something, see something, say something, like we're always told to do, maybe these young people have had enough of doing that and being ignored that it means absolutely nothing anymore to them because it never meant jack shit to them throughout their entire existence. Just as it doesn't mean anything to most of us anymore, who have said something as well, who used to live in a society where when you did say something, things usually occurred. Things were looked into. Now it's just a slogan, a bumper sticker. We see at airports. We throw around school campuses. We tell young women. And when they've said something, nothing ever happens. So what do you expect out of these young students at this moment in time, really? If you're wondering whether any of this lines up with the violence inside that house, the unsealed records say Zanna Kornodal fought hard. Investigators wrote about defensive wounds and cast off blood that signaled an intense struggle in the room where she died. The point isn't to be graphic. It's to understand why a man might show up with shredded skin across his knuckles and a cut on his ring finger days after four young people were murdered. And nobody thought to look there. Even his own posture shifted. Classmates noticed he stopped bringing his phone to class after the killings, looked more disheveled, and seemed determined not to join the conversations every other person on campus was having about the murders. One student eventually called the tip line to report having seen him with bloody knuckles shortly before the attacks. Or shortly after the attacks, I should say. And in a moment that still makes people's voices drop, he supposedly commented that whoever committed the crime must have been pretty good. and maybe a one-and-done event like a criminology post-mortem stripped of empathy. Must have been pretty good. Maybe a one-and-done. As the guy with stripped knuckles, days after this, driving the car they're searching for, says aloud. The number of complaints can feel abstract, so it's worth slowing down and showing you how they sound in the raw. Reports of outspoken, discriminatory comments, homophobic, xenophobic, misogynistic, get written off sometimes as personality flaws. But when those words are paired with proximity, his habit of standing too close, leaning over the shoulders of women, blocking their path to the door, the behavior stops living in the hypothetical. A woman staring at her keyboard while feeling someone's breath at their shoulder is not debating theory. She's trying to keep her pulse at a manageable clip. Another student describing a three-hour hallway monologue isn't looking to make news. He's telling you what it feels like to be trapped in a conversation with a man who needs you to know he can dominate a room the way he believes he can dominate a woman. When these stories are told in isolation, you can argue about interpretations. When they arrive 13 times in 3 months, the argument withers. There's also the part nobody wants to admit out loud. Plenty of people with tenure and titles saw it. The professor's warning, mark my word, reads today like an alarm bell everybody heard and nobody could unmuffle. She said plainly, in a few years, with a doctorate and a classroom, he'd be the kind of teacher who gets exposed for essay and stalking. And it didn't take a few years. You can chalk that up to hindsight if it makes you feel better. But her words were on paper weeks before the murders. She even urged a concrete step, cutting his funding, getting him out, close the door, which they eventually did. Bureaucracies don't move that fast, though. Committees meet, calendars filled, guidelines are reviewed, and while the machine does what it does, people keep taking the long way around the hallway where he might be standing. The detail that rattles is how ordinary the days looked from the outside. He still showed up to class. He still sent emails, oblivious to everyone around him. A professor recalled him arriving incredibly late on November 15th, then firing off a message 2 days later about not being there, and on the 18th, switching his car registration from Pennsylvania to Washington. Kinds of everyday administrative moves that mean nothing on their own, but look different when context arrives. There's even a note in the records about a selfie taken hours after the murders. You know that one. Arms covered. Questionable fingers. One more breadcrumb people wish didn't exist. Stack that next to a puffy jacket and the raw knuckles, and it stops feeling like coincidence. It reads like a man trying to cover a map. Students remember he changed after the killings in ways that feel obvious once you've seen someone cross a line. The phone line or the phone left behind, the careful avoidance of case chatter, the disheveled look that says sleep is an issue, the offhand clinical compliments about a killer's skill as if this were a paper to grade, not a house ripped open with a knife and fellow students massacred. At least one student tied what she seemed to a call to police, the bloody knuckles, the vibe of someone who'd been fighting with drywall or something harder. If you're looking for the moment where a campus rumor becomes a documented concern, it's right there in the call logs, in the interview notes. It all points back to the core. Inside that department, people experience a sustained pattern of intimidation and denigration, aimed mostly at women, and wrote it down. A university answered with training. A professor tried to pull the ripcord, warning plainly where this kind of personality often lands. And then 4 students were murdered across the state line, and the man everyone had been filing away as a problem reappeared with marks on his hands and a new way of moving through the building. You can call it hindsight bias if you need a blunt edge, but the paper trail existed before the bodies were found. That's the part that keeps you awake. The warnings were not invented after the fact. They were already stamped with dates. But look what they were trying to do within the school. Because that's all they could do. Move him along somewhere else. Pass the trash. We saw it with the Andrew McGann case in Arkansas. The elementary teacher passed from school to school. No disciplinary actions noted to the next school. Just filed away privately, quietly. You take our trash. You deal with him. He's your problem now. Had he not killed, that's exactly what would have happened. Someone else's problem. Because what do you do when these signs exist and there's nothing you can do to stop them? There's a point in every retelling where people ask if anyone could have stopped it. It's a fair question, and it sits heavy because there isn't a clean answer. Universities aren't criminal courts. They run on committees and codes of conduct, not probable cause. You can sanction speech, coach a student, require a training session. You can't predict a massacre. But what the record shows is a department trying to hold a line with the tools it had while a specific man tested how far he could lean over that line without being thrown out. And when you strip away the legal language, the psychology buzzwords, the academic brand names, the story reads like a simple human calculus. He told you who he was. The people around him believed him. The system didn't move fast enough. Today, obviously, the case is adjudicated. He's serving life without parole, the death penalty off the table, after the guilty plea. The families will never get what they lost. The classmates will never unlearn how quickly a seminar room can tilt from uncomfortable to dangerous. The records will sit on a state website where people cycle through them for a class paper or documentary, pulling the same quotes that have been haunting the folks who actually lived them. If there's any use left in this story, it's the way it clarifies the stakes. When a swarm of small harms collects around a single person, demanding attention with demeaning comments, doorways blocked, a teenager escorted home, a professor saying, mark my word, it isn't overreacting to take it seriously. Sometimes a pattern is more than attitude. Sometimes it's a roadmap with the ending already penciled in. Let me know what your thoughts are in the comments section on our YouTube page. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us if you're not already there. And be sure to press subscribe. Also on the podcast platforms, take us with us wherever you go. Again, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. What do you do? What do we do in a society with people like this that we know will strike but have not yet? That's the big question. I'm interested in your thoughts in the comments. Until next time, I am Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.